Well, let's
exactly.
Well, let's get this started. Let's get this party started. I sent out an email. I've got each of what everybody sort of suggested, and Megan's going to do the intro, and we'll talk a little bit, and then we'll start it. And Julie, you're going to start with your first one, and then Megan will go do. You'll introduce your first one. You'll say why you liked it, what you learned from it, or whatever. And then we'll discuss a little bit, and then we'll go to the next one.
Okay,
cool.
So who's starting? I wasn't really listening.
It's the investment that you put into this, the professionalism.
Listen.
Listen.
We always make it sound good, so I don't want to hear your complaints.
Blah, blah, blah. Whatever. Hold on. Shut up.
I feel like we should just use this as the intro. Up.
Let's just dive right into it. Okay.
Oh yeah, I have
Jesus
to read
Christ,
something.
I sent something.
No, I have it. I have it.
Right, well,
God, such a bad mood. Give me a second. okay. Well, Jesus Christ, this is like a novella.
No, you're not going to read the whole thing. You can read. No, you just read the first couple of lines. That's all. And then we'll just
How do we say Ellen's last name again?
Cordesoja.
All right. You make it sound so easy. Okay.
It's Finnish.
Oh, God. Okay. We might have to do a couple versions. This is really long, Julie. No, for real. Okay.
It doesn't have to all be to... If you want, I'd be happy to pick up some lines and make believe I'm a radio guy like you.
Do you want to split this up?
Yes.
Like we're co-anchors?
Yes, let's do that.
Wow.
You know, this sounded really good in my head when I was typing it.
Well, I'm sure it did. When one person reads this, it's quite long.
I have
long.
To keep the
Okay, do you have it
down.
In front of you?
Yeah, I got it in front
Okay.
of you. Okay.
Why? All right, so I'm going to read the first paragraph, you the second, me the third, you the fourth.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like radio news.
Like real anchors.
Like real anchors.
Okay.
Like mommy and daddy anchors.
Sorry, Julie. It's probably better that you don't have a copy of this. All right.
I think I'm okay with that.
All right. Ready? Welcome to It's All Journalism. I'm Megan Cloherty, here today with fellow producer Michael O'Connell.
Also on the phone with us is our Louisiana Bureau Chief, Julia O'Donoghue. She's actually in Los Angeles.
Hey, Julie.
Hey.
She's on vacation right now. Joining us for our special episode to mark our 100th podcast.
Woo!
We don't have any guests lined up. Instead, Julie, Mike, and I are going to talk about some of our favorite interviews and maybe discuss what we're planning for the podcast in the coming months.
Yeah, Megan's not really behind this necessarily. She's afraid this is going to turn into a really bad Saturday Night Live sketch. That was fun. Do you remember that one we did?
That was fun. That was a good
one.
That was a really good one. Yeah.
But we're going to try to put a sincere effort into making this a memorable podcast. This is kind of a big deal for us. I mean, the fact that we did 100 of something on our own.
The fact that we stood each other for this long is also quite the milestone.
It's a testament to our will. But before we start, there are a couple of things that we should sort of be talking about or we should mention. We wanted to thank Jolie Lee, Anna Myers, and Ellen Cordesoja, who've also helped us on this podcast and served in various capacities as producers. And also Josh Hatch, who's been an ongoing supporter for us, as well as Tiffany Shackford, who helped us set up the partnership we have with the Association of Alternative News Media. There will be a podcast interview with her later this week that we're going to post, and she talks about the AAN conference is coming up in a week in Nashville.
Okay, so the way this is going to work is we've each picked our three favorite episodes, and we're going to take turns introducing and then discussing them. So Julie is at that first.
Yes.
Hopefully she's ready with
her
pick.
She's going to get on base.
Yeah, no, I am. So I guess I'll start with one of my favorite episodes is the episode where I interviewed Emily Nussbaum, who is the television critic for The New Yorker.
Currently, one of the big advantages about writing for a print place is at The New Yorker, I can write long. I have fact-checking and copy editing. I can go through several drafts, and I feel like I can have as an ambition, ideally, it depends on the column, but to write criticism rather than reviews and to write about things in a way that I think matches TV as a form. I mean, all television writers have different ways of approaching this. And I think there's a lot to be said for a quick response, and there's a lot to be said for being in the conversation in an immediate way. But ideally, what I'm trying to do with those columns is write something that has a lasting feeling, and I want my writing to sound a certain way, and I have all these different ambitions about it.
Probably what was so thrilling about that for me is I'm a huge fan of her work. I think that she has kind of a different voice than a traditional television critic. She and I have very similar tastes, and also she goes a little bit against the grain. She doesn't like gratuitous violence in TV, which I also struggle with. So sometimes she kind of is critical of something like Breaking Bad. That's not to say she didn't like Breaking Bad. I think she did. Mm-hmm. But for being so violent. And she's critical of shows that maybe don't have strong female leads. So I think, you know, like selfishly, that was just a thrill for me because I got to meet her and talk to her. And terms of learning about it, I mean, she had kind of a different path to journalism. She was in a PhD program, I believe, for something like English literature, and she started writing on the side and eventually sort of rolled that up into a career, obviously. And I think that that's an interesting angle. That's not the approach I took to my career. But I think it's good to hear from people who are very successful, who kind of maybe, you know, didn't start out writing for their college newspaper or whatever, who had kind of a different path.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's also nice to hear from people who are like really successful, who maybe came to this as a second career in life, you know, that it wasn't like from the age of 12, they knew that they...
Right, yeah, they kind of discovered it.
All those really annoying people that you hate in the newsroom, all those successful people. Now, yeah, that was one of my favorite ones, too. I didn't put it down on my list, but I liked it because I liked it for a lot of reasons. One of the things we strive to do in the podcast is make them conversational. And that was an incredibly conversational talk you had with her, and the fact that it was recorded in a garden.
I was going to say it was one of our only field interviews where they're sitting in a park bench,
and then these planes flying over. It was you know, it had a lot of atmosphere, and she was a very smart person, and she had she could elaborate and discuss her opinions very easily.
I was kind of surprised by that one because she was drawing parallels between different shows that you wouldn't think of. Like I didn't know what to expect from it. I thought maybe she'd review some of the popular shows now, or I didn't know. But she was kind of making you think back to, what was it, Julie, like My So-Called Life and stuff like that, where you're like, oh, I kind of want to like rewatch that and see what she's talking about.
Buffy,
yeah, it was good.
A big one.
That was an interesting one.
Yeah, I don't want to go on about this, but the other thing I like about her is that she watches a very wide breadth of television. I mean, she will give like 800 or 1,000 words to an ABC Family show in The New Yorker, which is not...
Yeah, like Bunheads.
Yeah, exactly. Like a show that's aimed at, ostensibly aimed at teenagers, you know? So I kind of appreciate her viewpoint. And she was on board from the beginning. I contacted her and she was like, yeah, let's do it, you know?
Yeah, that's really approachable and cool.
That's always cool. So Megan?
My first pick is Bethany Swain, who is a former CNN photojournalist and is now teaching photojournalism in video at the University of Maryland. And it was really interesting to have her on. I think obviously my bias is video. I have a video background, TV background. And it was interesting to hear somebody who really like addresses newbies every day and kind of broke down really how you take a non-visual story and make it visual. She gave us tips. She talked about like the variety of shots you want to have and the importance of sound and how to use it in video. And it was just a really good, like if you're looking to start a video or maybe just like experiment with it when you're out on a story, it was a good podcast as far as just learning the basics.
And she brought us gifts when she came, which is always good.
And she took Michael's picture.
And she took Michael's, well, I'm
which
sorry.
Was all, which ruined it. No.
I'm sorry. I have a face for podcasting.
I like hearing from someone who, I wasn't in the room for that one, but as I remember it, she was a shooter, right, Megan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like a fairly petite person who's a shooter, for those of us who not those of our audience who might not be very familiar with this, that's kind of unusual. Usually it's a dude who does that.
And we talked about that too, sort of like being a woman in the newsroom, especially in photojournalism, which is still very male dominant.
And she had such wonderful stories, field stories. She was in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
She talked about that.
Yeah.
We went on a foot patrol through Kabul, which was fascinating. We went with, not with General Jones on the actual foot patrol. There was a general from the British military who was there, who took us around. And while we were there, the region we went to doesn't have running water. So there's sewage that goes right down the road. And I saw something that I wanted to take a picture of on the other side of the sewage that was going down the road, and I actually fell in.
Oh.
And we had just got on the ground, so I was covered up to my knee for the entire rest of the day with what was, was not running
Yuck.
Water. But one thing that really had kind of opened up my eyes to that was, so I fell, I'm in this new country, it's my first time in a hostile region, and people came and were rushing, and I was like, gosh, what's going on? They went and got buckets to where their water was. And again, it's not running water. They didn't go and get a hose to help wash me off and clean me off. And I was really just kind of impressed with total language barrier. You know, we weren't communicating, you know, with words,
mm-hmm.
but they really wanted to, you know, to help me.
She showed up with her gear. You know, we were waiting for her out front, and this car pulls up, and she just starts pulling out all these knapsacks. And you're like, you know, you really didn't have to bring your cameras, but apparently she could take some wherever she goes.
Yeah, that was a good one.
That was a real good one.
All right, Mike, you're up.
Cat Downs. This is an interview that that Megan set up. We just got really lucky in the timing of it. Cat Downs is the graphics editor at the Washington Post, and we had set up the interview because we wanted to just talk about graphics in general. The first day that we were going to have her come in, she had to postpone it because she was actually putting together the Post's coverage of the Boston bombing. But she committed to coming the next Saturday, and the next Saturday, of course, was the day after the apprehension of the one suspect and the killing of the other suspect and all the craziness that went on in that week. And so she came in and she just told us everything that she'd done that week.
Using geolocation and just really interesting ways of covering that story.
Talking about a different way of telling the news, and it was completely different perspective, and it was very digital, that sort of thinking, and it was really great. And what I really loved about the conversation is she just opened up her head. We pushed her and she said, okay. And she just like, you need this, you need this, you need this, you mm-hmm. got to do this, you got to think about this. And so when you get somebody who's that, you know, instructive in the way that they answer questions and present things, I mean, it's a wonderful interview.
I mean, I'm of the view that sometimes things catch on and then sometimes they don't. And a lot of times that has to do with how they're played on the site and the promotion and all that kind of stuff. So I think you have to have sort of an independent way of evaluating the success of things and knowing what's good. And then when you continue to create things that are good, then you can build an audience around that. And that's really the goal, not kind of like the fly by tons of hits on something that's kind of goofy, which is great, but that's not going to get sort of the core people that you want to see again and again. And those are the kind of people that we want to be on our site. So those are the things that I'm thinking about.
My takeaway from that one, too, I remember, I mean, obviously the focus was on how editorially they approached the bombings from a graphic standpoint. But I remember her also talking about she's really good on social and she's really good at building her own brand and her own archive of her stories. And she's really on top of it. If you go to her website, which I think it's cat-downs. Anyway, but if you Google her, you'll find her.
We're going to have links for all of these with this podcast.
She was just talking about like tagging your own work and just really like being good to yourself when it comes to keeping your career, you know, out there and keeping your work out there. So that was a good one.
My second one is an old one that we did with Neil Augenstein, who's actually works upstairs here with Megan. And he sort of pioneers in the Washington, D.C. area, covering news for a 24-hour radio station, shooting all his own video, doing all his own audio on his iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's also our tech page editor now.
Yeah. But he you should definitely check out his, you know, do a Google search on him and go to his website. He's got tutorials. And he came in and he told us, you know, what programs you could use, how you can edit your video and your audio on your cell phone and get it so that it's, you know, radio quality or digital quality so that you can put it up on the web. So very practical podcast. He was really, really fun to have him in.
When iPhone came out, and in particular, one particular application that allowed multi-track editing, that was the point where I was able to say, you know, this could be the thing that we're waiting for. And now that we are able to do that, we are able to do all the production that we could do on a laptop on a single device. Of course, that has a lot of benefits. You can, as soon as you're done doing the interview, you can immediately switch to editing mode, and you can pull a few cuts and email them immediately. You can do a full-blown wrap that you would do on a laptop. You can do it on your phone. And, of course, you can send pictures, you can send videos, you can write your script, you can do all the social media. And just being able to do it all on one device really has streamlined the entire process.
Really, if you Google iPhone reporting, he's the guy who comes up. His iPhone's in the museum. He was a great source to have on here, and he's the one who taught me how to use specific apps to do my job, which I'm all on the iPhone too. So there you go.
Yeah, that podcast happened before I was involved, and Mike and I were just friends, and I found that super helpful. I was in grad school for journalism at the time, and I told a bunch of people about it. And because I think I was being told at the time that there was no way to get sort of high quality audio from your iPhone.
Yeah. I mean, you'll hear that.
And I think for people who are trying to do audio work on what I'll say is on a budget or don't have like a station backing them, you know, obviously Neil works for a huge commercial radio station that's highly successful, but I think it was like super helpful. That was my opinion. It's one of the most helpful podcasts we've done.
So yeah. Megan, your second choice?
Nope. It was Julie after me.
Oh, it was Julie after you. Okay. Julie.
So my second is John Sullivan, who is now he has like three different jobs. He's an investigative. He's one of the investigative reporters at the Washington Post. He also works at American University in a couple different capacities. You all actually might know more about what he does. He went there. But I worked for him when he was at Northwestern University, and we interviewed him primarily about working as an investigative reporter, but also he won the Pulitzer Prize for a story he did in 2012 on the Philadelphia school system and violence in the school system. And I guess what I found most helpful about that interview was he walked us through the process of how he discovered this story and how he determined like what they were going to do with the story. He led a team of people who worked on it and sort of the step-by-step process of how they went about deciding how to package it and put it together and what type of approach they were going to take.
I don't know if there is a proper distinction. I mean, I think we say it because it's easier to let people know the scope of your work. But the reality is that many reporters do a lot of the things investigative reporters do every day. I think probably one of the keys is that we look for wrongdoing. We look for harm. We don't typically, we're analyzing a problem. We're trying to determine what is the true state of this agency or, and so we're usually trying to determine, is there something wrong here? And I think a lot of reporters do that, but I think a lot of reporters also do lots of other types of stories too. Investigative reporters focus mainly on those things.
Yeah. That was another one where he like opened his head. You know what I mean? It was somebody who just really knows what he's doing, and to kind of get a glimpse into how he approached something was really fascinating.
Yeah, and we run into this every once in a while. We'll get somebody in here who's an expert at it, but they don't necessarily think of themselves as expert at it, and they're kind of like, well, I'm not sure what I'm going to say. And he had no idea what he really was going to say, but he just opened up his head and, you know, this is the, yeah, this is the way I think when I approach a story. These are the things I'm looking for. This is how a story changes. This is how I put something together. And then we talked a little bit about some of the bells and whistles of digital, which, you know, I don't think he was necessarily thinking a lot about, but, you know, how
from an investigative standpoint,
yeah,
right?
From an investigative standpoint, how you can sort of incorporate that into your work. So, yeah, no, that was super interesting.
Yeah, that was a good one. That was a good one.
That was a good one. Yeah. Shut up, Megan. So just to shut you up, why don't you tell us your next one?
I really like the interview we had with Scott Broadbeck, who is the creator and editor of Arl Now, which is a hyper-local website that covers Arlington, Virginia. And he has since expanded to Bethesda and to Reston. And I guess it's maybe how I thought this podcast would kind of start, is focusing on very digital forward, independent operations and seeing how people were being successful at that. And so when we had him on and he talked about staying hyperlocal and maintaining the business alongside the editorial and how he's expanding and hiring, and it was just really interesting. It was like basically somebody taking a blog and taking interest in his community to something that's profitable and really informs people. And yeah. I thought it was just a good, you know, kind of soup to nuts breakdown of how you cover a community.
Local news is a very important thing, both for democracy mm-hmm. and, you know, for people who live in a community. It literally is, you know, the record of what's happening down the street, what's happening with your county government. It's information that's very relevant to people. National news, what's happening in Washington, you know, on Capitol Hill, that's relevant to people around here. But mm-hmm. really, local news is what really impacts a lot of daily lives.
Yeah, we've talked about that with other sort of blog type things that become something bigger, like Homicide Watch DC or with Laura Amico. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just people just sort of seeing a need and just pouring themselves into it and right. then creating something bigger out of it. I mean, that's really, really great. And his, Scott was really, because I had spent 10 years in sort of covering that same sort of area. It was really kind of heartening to see somebody who was, you know, exploiting that same area in it from a digital perspective and succeeding. That's always, you know, something that's exciting to see.
And he's very smart how he's expanding, because, I mean, Mike and I both have a background in community news. And, I mean, he's picked communities that have, like, a very distinct identity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Arlington and Reston.
Well, and they're not so big that they're not coverable.
Yeah,
you know?
You can get your arms around
right.
it. I mean, he was covering Arlington with just a car and a laptop, basically, and a camera.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a way to do it. Megan, and you have another one.
I do.
This is your final one.
Make it a good play.
Make it a good play.
My next one is Deb Amblin, who is with the New York Times Crossword Puzzles. She has a wordplay blog with them, and then she also has her Buzzology column on Yahoo. And I just thought this was really fun. We had her on the phone, but she was talking to us about, you know, the challenges of coming up with themes for crosswords, how they're constructed, the tricks of solving them. And we just talked about how you become a crossword puzzle builder. I mean, it is in a weird way a form of journalism, because you have to, you know, challenge yourself, come up with these topical themes and assume that people you are marketing to are going to get it. And it was great. It was
She's
really interesting.
Figuring out how to appeal to a particular audience that was really responsive to the type of work she was doing.
A lot of people have assumed that a crossword puzzle is a very solitary endeavor. I don't think it is. I think it's an incredibly social thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's nothing better, you know, if you're sitting in a cafe doing the crossword puzzle and you see a cute guy, you know, why not ask him for help with a clue? You know?
Hey, she's giving me ideas, Mike.
Speed dating and crossword puzzling.
She was so fun. I mean, it was like, you know, she really enjoys what she does. And I highly recommend her column on Yahoo, which I think is hilarious. I'm not a crossword person, and it's not like you don't have to be into the crossword to enjoy the interview.
Yeah, I think
I'm sure we all have done crosswords before and have some idea what's going on.
Yeah, she does that. Like, it's like the Yahoo column is sort of like a tech column, like understanding tech, but in sort of weird ways, mm-hmm. the weird acts, you know, explaining to people what a selfie is. you know, things, but doing it in a humorous way, you know, things like that's not what she does every week, but you know, that's just one of the topics that she touches on. My final one, my final choice is Amy Webb of the Webb Media Group. This is somebody that Anna Myers helped us get in the studio. It was a good get for us. She was very smart and she was very funny. And that's really all you really kind of need to say about her.
It's like the I mean, winning she, formula.
No, I could, and when we were done, I just looked at her and I said, I could listen to you talk for 5 hours. The things that she thinks about, the way she sort of sees the direction that journalism is going from a technological standpoint is just, you know, you just need to listen to her a little bit to sort of get the fires in your brain going. And mm-hmm. that's really what I enjoyed about that conversation.
And we also had her on because she had not recently, but somewhat recently, published a book about online dating and how her and her husband met and how she approached it completely like a nerd, which I think she'll be okay with me saying, which was all like statistical. And she just really has sort of a math brain in a journalism creative field.
You know, it was astonishing to me watching how most news organizations, even the ones who at the time were pretty progressive, they just weren't moving quickly enough. And it wasn't just that they weren't moving quickly enough. Strategically, they weren't moving in the right direction. Reporters, I found it fascinating that reporters at newspapers were so intent on having their stories be on A1 with a very limited audience and, you know, on a material that was going to disappear eventually when, you know, on the internet, you have multipliers that are very, you know, unknown. You have the ability to be seen by, you know, a factor of 15 times more people. And it was just a mindset to me that was just so strange. You know, it was a struggle. It wasn't a collaboration. And I still see that today, which is, you know, shocking to me.
So it was fascinating to see the way she's just uber plugged into technology and what's next and sort of how we're all doing this the right and wrong way at the same time.
So, Julie, you're going to wrap this up with your...
My final pick was Stephen Thompson, who works for NPR. You might know him from NPR Music, as well as he does a podcast called Pop Culture Happy Hour that NPR puts out. And he had been the founder of the AV Club over at the Onion, although he hasn't been there for a long time. This is someone else I am just like a big fan of. I guess you would have to say like his personality or his presence. I listen to both the NPR Music podcast that he's on and Pop Culture Happy Hour very regularly. And I mean, I was interested in talking to him because I kind of like the way he talks about music. I mean, I feel like a lot of music criticism can be a little bit daunting for people who are not like super into alternative music or that type of scene. It can be like there can be kind of like a wall between you and the person talking about what they're talking about. And I have never gotten that feeling from him. It's always been pretty warm and kind of accessible.
Yeah.
And his interview was that way too.
Yeah.
He presents, you know, on the podcast. I mean,
well, and it was nice to have somebody in who knows what podcasting is and knows how to, you know, just keep the conversation flowing. Right. And he was great. It was so natural.
One of the fun, the most fun I've had doing this is just talking to him. He was a great, you know, great interview. He was excited. He was lively. He just fun.
You pick up the Onion for the first time and you go through this process. Is this real? Like, this can't be real. No. What? Wait, what? You know, and because we have a natural tendency to believe things we read when they're in official looking publications, which is a very terrifying part of the human condition. And
if somebody went to the trouble of printing it,
must be true. And yes. And so you have that process of, is this real? Is this real? Is this real? Okay, it's fake. And then you get to the AV Club and it's, is this fake? Is this fake? Is this fake? Oh, it must be real.
Worlds colliding. It was just.
And so, you know, people would be like, you must have made up this incredibly dry 5,000 word interview with Peter Bogdanovich.
And also, coincidentally, is our most popular, most downloaded podcast. It helps when somebody who's on it, who has a big following, tweets us out on their. But that's. So I, you know,
I think that speaks to how much people like him.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think he's a very likable person. I would just recommending to everyone, Pop Culture Happy Hour is one of my favorite podcasts, and some of it is because the people on it seem like regular people. I mean, I listen to some other culture podcasts that I certainly like and enjoy, but these people seem more like,
yeah, they seem,
you know,
like friends.
Normal, just, yeah, sitting around with friends. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And that's kind of what we were lucky to sort of tap into a little of that. So this wasn't really going to be much more than this. We were just going to sort of go over things. We weren't sure what to do as far as
spitballing
100 episodes or 100 podcasts. Technically, we've probably posted a little bit more with little special editions and previews and things. But 100 is a pretty good number, I think.
It is. And I think we should say thank you to the people who are downloading these podcasts and listening on a regular basis.
Yes.
For some reason, you like us. you like hearing what we have to say and the guests we have on, and we appreciate that.
Yeah, no, it was the weirdest thing that Megan came up to me not too long ago, and she was telling me about something she's at, and she said, one of her friends came up to her and says, I listen to your podcast every day, and it surprised her. We do get feedback.
It did surprise. That I don't think we have listeners, but it hadn't gotten to the point where, you know, when you start getting feedback on something, you're like, wait. This is something that actually is reaching people. It was very cool.
Yeah, it was very cool. And we get really positive tweets sometimes, and we get another from emails and comments and stuff. So it's always nice to hear that and sort of give us the fire engines. By and large, everything's been kind of positive that we've been getting, and it's been nice. As far as what we're thinking going forward, I think we're thinking of just sort of continuing to doing what we're doing, try to bring in some more interesting guests. We've got a couple of events that we're actually gearing ourselves up towards. The first one is the AAN conference, the Association of Alternative News Media. Their conference is going to be July 10th through 12th in Nashville.
Michael gets to go to that.
I get to go to that.
He gets to honky tonk with the best of all.
Exactly. And I'm going to be talking about audio, which should be really interesting because I'm sort of okay at it. I'm not great.
That's not true. You're better than the average bear, I'd say.
That's yeah. I think I can fake talking to half an hour. Hopefully these people won't stone me. They'll have to leave their vegetables outside.
Yeah, we'll have some good podcasts coming out of that conference. Yes. There's a lot of interesting people who will be there, and we'll get some good bites from that. And then we have the Online News Association conference coming up. Hopefully we can see some of our listeners and friends there, September 25th through 27th in Chicago. I think we also have a lot of ideas we're tossing around, maybe a website redesign, starting.
We definitely need to do a website redesign. We're a little old on that.
Yeah.
We're dragging our feet, but we gotta do it. We don't do this as our job. I don't know if that's been reiterated enough on this show. This is a hobby, and we've just been very fortunate that we've been able to fit it into our schedule to do it once a week. There are people who do podcasts monthly, but we felt that that we would do better for our audience and just for ourselves if we could challenge ourselves to get it done, to put together an episode every week. And we've been very lucky. We've had a lot of really interesting people. Good feedback.
And let us know too, if you have any, journalists you want to hear from or people who you think would be great guests
or topics.
Topics. Yeah. Let us know. Cause we're always open to any kind of feedback.
Yeah. So. We're totally not that well planned out. We just, if we find, no, I think.
I think they can tell that by now.
Sometimes we'll get people in here that for no other reason, they just seem like an interesting person. They might have something interesting to say.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been very lucky that our instinct on that, many of our podcasts, on two or three of our podcasts have been very good. That's straight up. But that's a pretty good percentage over 100 podcasts. And we're also thinking, we've been toying with the idea of doing a Kickstarter. But, to do that, then you got to kind of set up some goals and ideas. And so it's more a matter of setting some time aside and say, okay, if we're going to do
goals.
This, what is it? What do we, we're going to ask people to give us money. What is it we're going to A, do with that money, and B, what is it we're going to provide them? So it's in the ephemera that floats above what we're doing here. So at some point we'll pull it down. We'll do something. But
I think finally, last but not least, we should thank Federal News Radio.
Yes.
For letting us use their fabulous studios for most, if not all, of these podcasts.
And Lisa Wolf, my boss, I asked her to do it, and she was like, sure.
Yeah,
sure,
okay.
Whatever.
Yes.
Correct. Don't break anything. So so far we haven't.
So yeah, thank God.
Well, this turned out pretty well. Yeah. There was less, you know.
Yeah. Less. Self-congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're bordering, I think, at this point.
Yeah, I think so. I think we've patted ourselves enough. So
happy 100th episode.
Yes. Have some cake.
Hooray.
Hooray. And thank you for listening. You've been listening to It's All Journalism, a weekly podcast about the changing state of digital news. Find more info on us and download other episodes at itsalljournalism.com. This podcast is produced in partnership with the Association of Alternative News Media. Thanks for listening.